For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Bears and Cardinals. Chicago media is calling for Matt Eberflus to be fired. Do you think that's the right decision right now?
Well, it's not if you go by what their record is and where they are. To have Caleb Williams, even though he came in with such big hopes and dreams, number one overall pick, you're a 500 football team at the halfway point. That's not the end of the world. I think if you had told me that before the season started, I would say that sounds reasonable. Here's the dilemma, though, is that you had the debacle of the way last week ended. They really no-showed this game today. I mean, it really was embarrassing.
It was.
They played like a team that has given up on their coach as far as the trust in their coach, the trust in the game plan and things. Yep. That was just evident. So that's strike one against the guy. The other big issue, though, is because he's a defensive coach and he did not have a great track record there before the season, there's going to be the sense there that he's not the right guy to get the most out of Caleb Williams. And that, to me, is the bigger issue. You see what Jaden Daniels is doing. Not that Williams has played poorly. Before the bye week, he had a great stretch there where he had seven touchdowns in three games, and they won all three. Now, they were against crappy teams, but at least the guy was making plays, and they were lighting up the scoreboard. So it's not like it can't be done, but the issue is if they had brought in a guy who was a Ben Johnson or a Bobby Slowick or one of these big offensive coordinators, people would be willing to give him the benefit of the doubt and give it time. They're not, because he's a defensive coach who has not won anything there. And now the optics of what happened today, they look like they mailed in the game, Pat, is what it seemed like.
Yeah. And with my experience going back to the players' interviews,
we talked about that on Thursday.
I'm telling you, they were still dwelling on that loss. Like, as a captain, as a older guy that's played in this league for a very long time, we got to tell guys, like, we can't live in the past. Like, yeah, we may have our thoughts. We may have our suggestions on how we thought this game should have went or what coach should have done. But I feel like they carry that baggage from Washington into this game, and as to your point, it was a no-show. Like, the defense got pummeled. Like, a running back, who's the running back number 31?
DeMarcado.
Yeah, DeMarcado, man, he's looked like a damn Speedy Gonzalez out there on that 75-yard run in the third quarter. It just, when you see things like that, that just goes to show me, as a former player, that guys are still living in the past on what happened in the week prior. They're not locked in the situation or in the moment right now, because when have you seen the Chicago Bears give up a 75-yard run? They're top 10 defense in this league, right?
Talent-wise, they are. On paper, they are.
Exactly. So you've never seen them give up that type of play, but to our point last week, you had players still talking about the coach's decision, what happened in the Washington game. Like, that stuff is behind us. We have to focus on the task that's in front of us right now. So, yeah, we lost that game. We can't do nothing about it. We had players doing certain things. We feel like coach should have made a better decision, which I thought you should have those conversations in-house versus coming out and saying as a player, coaches, this, that, and the other. But I just feel like last week carry over into this week, and that's why it was a no-show for the Bears today.
And let's see if it carries over past this. Dolphins and Bills, this was a very exciting game.
It was.
That ended on a 61-yard field goal by Tyler Bass after he had missed an extra point earlier in the game.
Yep.
should the Dolphins feel, should they view this as a moral victory?
No, absolutely not. There's no moral victories in the NFL. And because the Miami Dolphins have given up a game-winning drive 2 weeks in a row, last week to the Arizona and this week to the Buffalo Bills. So you've been in position to win games. You have to learn how to finish games now. So in the NFL, and you're 2-16. So there's no more victories. I could see if you was 5-1 or 5-2 team, possibly you could say, all right, guys, yeah, this was a more victory to us because we did such and such well. With the Dolphins, they're 2-6 now. Ain't no such thing as a more victory because now they're fighting to be above 500 because this was a team, I know they've been battling injuries. This was a team as well who we had high hopes for in the AFC East to battle with the Buffalo Bills because that's a two-horse race right now. So to your point, to answer your question, absolutely no. This should be a more victory for the Miami Dolphins.
So Tua only has one win against the Bills in his career, and that ain't going to fly, obviously. Big picture for him, for his career. You can't get beat by Buffalo every time you play him.
Mm-hmm.
There are no moral victories for players. There are no moral victories for coaches. There are for fans and people like me that are just media and fans. My thought, if I'm a Dolphins fan, though, my thought is, a month ago, I thought my quarterback might never play again.
Yeah.
That's what everybody was talking about. His career might be over. And then I had to go out and watch Tyler Huntley, Tim Boyle, and some other schlub, Skylar Thompson, play quarterback. And it was unwatchable.
Yeah.
The games were so bad. If I, like, we get, thank God I get paid to do this. It doesn't feel like a job. Watching the Dolphins games would have felt tedious enough where I wanted hazard pay. I wanted extra compensation for it. That's how boring their games were.
So, Pony, can you tell the listeners and viewers, when we talked about the Dolphin game, what was my comment to that?
You said, I got nothing to say about it until Tua comes back, I think is what you said. So my point is, yes, you lost two games on the final whistle, and you should have won those games. And when the season started, You've been to the playoffs the last 2 years. It's time to win these playoff games.
Exactly. But
in my opinion, the goalposts moved when your quarterback was down on the turf and it looked like he might not play again. I would just be so thankful that I'm getting to watch him play and they look like a competent, functional football team again. You're saying no, fine. Mm-hmm. But I would have positive thoughts about my
team. Because I was a Dolphin fan. I was a Dolphin fan. Yeah. a diehard Dolphin fan from the freaking Dan Marinos to the Jay Feely was our kicker to the
I was just gonna say you missed the Dan Marino years. You had to watch Jay Fiedler and AJ Feely and
Jay Fiedler, Chad Pennington, all those guys. But I was a
Dante Culpepper
on the 2 years that we had him. But, yeah, there's no more victories because, to your point, like you said, like, yeah, we was – well, they was on the ground a week ago. It was hard to watch – well, not a week ago, a couple weeks ago. It was hard to watch them and Tua's giving them hope. But the defense, you have been in position. Tua put the team in position to at least win the game or go into overtime. But your defense – have let you down 2 weeks in a row, which you should have been at the time what they was 2-3. So they should have been 2-4. So they should have been at least 4-4 right now.
And that's a different conversation if they're 500. I get that part, Pat.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to hear that you missed out on all the glory years of the Dolphins. If you were born in the 1950s, you would have had some great fun.
Yeah. I was 1990, man. I just missed them. So that was like when it was all gone pum.
Yep.
All right, moving on to the Rams and the Seahawks. Rams, wild win. What was Seattle thinking in overtime?
And
I called you, and I knew you was on another show.
But I was on TV.
I cannot wait to hear your thoughts.
I was befuddled by it. I was baffled by it. It to me, Here's what it did. This is my opinion on it. When I think obviously football, a lot of it is emotional game, mental game. Yes, the physical is what really, you know, people look at, but I think in game there are emotions to it and feelings around it. Mm-hmm. When you go for it on that fourth down, what shocked me about it is you have a defensive coach. I thought he was basically saying in that moment, I don't trust my defense to stop the Rams. If I don't score a touchdown here, we're not going to win the game. Right. So then you don't get it. And the defense has got to go out there now. And it's like, well, our coach just told us that he doesn't believe we're going to be able to get the job done. And sure enough, you know,
they did get the job done
way, and they gave up a 40-yard touchdown and they lost. Like, we've talked about this on earlier podcasts. I just don't understand why so many coaches don't want to take the points. And I get win probability percentages, and I get analytics and all that.
That is what's getting them in trouble right there. Analytics. But go ahead.
But what? But the analytics said to go for it there. I hope not.
I believe so. If, when I was watching the game, you know, they always put the analytic thing in the corner.
Yep.
And I believe it said go for it. But I'm like, yo, come on, man. This is overtime. You're already in position. And it was a long one. It wasn't like it was inches, right? I could see if it was inches. Yeah, that's questionable. But it was almost like a two-yard to get. You know what I mean? So at that point, being a defensive head coach, I'm kicking the field goal, and I'm going to put not the pressure on my defense. I'm going to put the pressure on the offense to put themselves in position to get a field goal. Because now, when you think about it, if a team already scored points on you, you're going to be like a 50-50 chance on trying to get in or trying to score. In that position, the Rams was in go mode. Soon as they went for it and didn't get it, Sean McVay, he ran the ball one time. I think I can't remember who they completed the pass to get him at the 40. Next play out of the timeout, they ran a play action, a corner route to number 15. I cannot remember his name. He ran and Woodley had horrible eyes on that. And we DeMarcus Robinson. We always talk about offenses condensing the sets. And I don't even know why he was even pressed in that situation, because for me as a defensive back, I would never want to press a receiver that's in a condensed set. Here's my reason why. Because nine times out of ten, he's going to be running through traffic. So if he is running through traffic, I'm going to get rubbed. If I'm off, it's going to give me a better opportunity to run over everything and collect them on the opposite side. Then if what Woodley was doing, he was impressed. They was in the fire zone, I'm assuming, because they was in some type of fire zone man-to-man. He looked at this guy. He was in the press technique. He thought Robinson was going to run the under. So he got lazy with his eyes out of the gate. And I text my good friend, Josh Bynes, who is GA over there. I don't know.
Quality control coach.
Yeah, quality control coach. I text him right after the game. I said, Woodley, bro, he had bad eyes from the get-go because he thought the guy was going to be running over or under. So he kind of got lackadaisical, kind of came off a little bit, and then Robinson straightened up right then and there. So what Tariq Woodley got to do is he had to understand his leverage. Like, if that guy's going under, yeah, we're going to let him go, but still get to your responsibility. Because if you go back and look at that play, as soon as the guy went under, he kind of like trailed behind him, kind of got lackadaisical, and that's when Robinson streaked back up the field, and that's when he kind of got in bad position. And that's when Robinson was able to get on the upfield shoulder of Woodley to complete that pass. But I text my guy. I said, man, he was he's too good of a player to allow that to happen. He has to be locked in.
Yeah, he won the defensive rookie of the year, didn't he? Or he came close to it. He had all those interceptions 2 years ago.
And he did. And that's the thing that comes with success early. Like, especially with the young generation that's coming in right now, they think that success, just the early success is just, yeah, it's all athletic ability. But if you want to last in this game and last in this league, you have to be willing to be locked in, not only be locked in for 60 minutes, you have to be able to be willing to do the little things every single day. Like, if there's no shortcuts. You got to be willing and be able to sacrifice the to be able to do the little things every single day and really understand your opponent. Like, when you're stepping out there, like, I was a young guy before. Like, I was year three, making Pro Bowls, all pros, 7 interceptions in my second year. But as the game started, as I started getting older, I'm like, man, if I want to last in this game, like, I want to be able to take my game to the next level, I got to be better with my body. I got to study film better. I got to be able to sacrifice what everybody else want to do after games, going having a good time. It's good to have a good time, but you got to pick and choose when you want to have your good times, right? So, like, there's so much that goes into being a good NFL player. But some guys just be caught up into the glimpse. And not saying that Woodley is caught up in the glimpse and the glam and what comes with the game, but not willing to put in to help you be remembered in the game. That's the difference.
Yeah, Tom Brady said fun was for when he was having Super Bowl parades. That's when he did his partying, not before games. He definitely. I wish he called the game where the dude, the Stevenson from the Bears, was celebrating while the Hail Mary play was going on. Brady would have had a heart attack in the booth if he had watched that live. Commanders and Giants, speaking of Washington, they're 7-2. It's their best start since 96. Is this all on Jaden Daniels?
Yeah, I think it's Jaden Daniels and Coach Quinn, because of what the defense is able to do and able to help Jaden with. And also Cliff Kingsbury. I think he's like the wild card in all of this. And going back to what we talked about early on in the season about these young quarterbacks and these organizations marrying a coordinator that's able to communicate with them, that's able to be on the same page with them, that's able to, feel and see the same things that they're seeing to make them comfortable in the NFL. And I think,
why is Kingsbury's offense a good fit for Daniels? You were around it. Why do you think it works for Daniels?
I just think with the Cliff Kingsbury offense, it gives Daniels that college feel. It gives him the exact same thing what he came from. So he's not coming into anything foreign. Like, he's coming into...
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Read options, RPO is what they call them. Read options, you know, finding your tight end across the middle, taking shots down the field, run the ball when you need. That's exactly what Jaden Daniels did when he was with in LSU. They tried to get him to do that when he was at ASU, Arizona State University, but Brian Kelly in the game was able to explore that even more, you know. So I just think Cliff Kingsbury, with his offense, with his college style play calling, it was just a perfect marriage for Jaden Daniels and him, and for the Washington Commanders to be able to start off as hot as they are. Like, he did not have to come into a system to where he had to learn a whole new playbook. I just feel like everything that he ran in college, Cliff Kingsbury made that appealing for him, and now he's calling that in the NFL for him, and that's why he's so successful right now.
I got to give a shout out to Terry McLaurin, who has been in offenses with some of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL for about 5 years. Mm-hmm. And now he's finally got a guy, and he's putting up numbers, and now he's getting recognized as one of the better. You can't throw yourself the ball when you play wide receiver.
Yeah.
You need a guy that can actually get it to you. And that's what sucks about that position. That's why these guys probably get so frustrated and get the diva mentality sometimes. But he's just been awesome for them this year. And dude that finally is getting the respect he deserves. He's a legit number one wide receiver now that he's got a quarterback that can get him the ball.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.